This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 117.
Sort of in between depression and what I call flourishing. Now, I use the word flourishing as a stand-in for what I mean and to help people understand what I mean when I say good mental health. Because right there, we're already starting a major discussion because the world operates on this absence model that you're mentally healthy because you're free of mental illness. My work measures mental health as the presence and absence of flourishing. And languishing is this in-between condition where you're not mentally ill, but you're not mentally healthy or right, which means you're not flourishing. And that's why we call it the middle child. You're sort of stuck in between. But a better description comes from some of my interviews with people who fit the criteria. And they talk about feeling not only this sense of emptiness, but they feel emotionally either drained or numb. By that, they're not feeling anything good, and they're not feeling anything bad. They're just feeling sort of nothing. Languishing is this condition that has been invisible to the world until I started measuring mental health positively. You can have the absence of good mental health, but not fit the criteria for mental illness.
Are you flourishing at work, or could you be languishing? What creates true well-being in the workplace?
Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversation, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level.
As we move into the Thanksgiving week in the United States, I want to take a moment to say how grateful I am to you for being part of the Future of HR community, for being a loyal listener of the podcast, and for supporting my mission to develop the next generation of HR leaders. The podcast continues to thrive because of your support and you telling others about the podcast and sharing episodes that you find valuable. So thank you again for your amazing support. And for those of you in the United States, I wish you a wonderful Thanksgiving. I also wanted to let you know about a special live event that I'm hosting on December 4th. And if you're tired of vague HR predictions and overhyped trends, or you're struggling to separate value from hype in the HR marketplace, well, then you need to register and attend my free event, the 2025 HR Prediction Throwdown, Separating Hype from Value. We'll have 4 future of work experts, 20 bold predictions, 1 big showdown, as Michael Watkins, Steve Hunt, Kelly Monahan, and I will battle it out using my hype versus value matrix format. We'll be discussing which trending topics will actually deliver value, which ones are hidden trends that others are missing, and what is a bright, shiny object, and more. This will not be your typical webinar because it's going to be fun, and we're going to have real-time prediction reveals, and there'll be no planned presentations. Audience members get to vote on our predictions, and we'll have Q&A with all the thought leaders at the end of the event. And more importantly, we hope you're going to gain clarity on which of our 2025 trends deserve your budget and time, and early insights to the emerging trends for the future, and frankly, a framework for cutting through the hype so you can focus on value. The event will be on December 4th at 11 a.m. Eastern, and you can go to futureofhr.com, that's futureofhr.com, to find the link to register for the HR Prediction Throwdown. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we cannot wait to see you there. With that, I want to introduce this week's guest, Corey Keyes. Corey is a professor emeritus of sociology at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, where he held the Winship Distinguished Research Professorship. He was a member of the prestigious MacArthur Foundation Research Network on Successful Aging, and his research introduced the concept of social well-being, flourishing, languishing, and his work is being used to prevent mental illness via the promotion of positive mental health. This is an insightful conversation and one of the most important topics that, frankly, we are not talking enough about, and that's well-being and mental health. And today we'll be talking mostly about Corey's latest book, which I highly recommend, Languishing: How to Feel Alive Again in a World That Wears Us Down. And this book is pragmatic and gives you ideas on how you not only can enhance your well-being, but also how you can enhance the well-being for your organization. And during my conversation with Corey, we discuss how languishing represents a state between depression and flourishing, characterized by feelings of emptiness and emotional numbness, the six domains of human excellence and their role as foundations for flourishing, why actively engaging in the five vitamins of flourishing is essential for mental well-being, the critical role of quality workplace relationships in preventing invisibility and promoting flourishing, and how leaders can create conditions that support well-being and flourishing in the workplace, and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Corey. Corey, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jackie, and thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast. I'm a big fan of your book and your research, and so it's just exciting to have you here. Such an important topic. And your book talks about this concept of languishing. Can you break that down for us in more simple terms? What is languishing, Corey?
Oh, goodness. All right. I've called it, and Adam Grant has called it, the middle child. It's sort of in between depression and what I call flourishing. Now, I use the word flourishing as a stand-in for what I mean and to help people understand what I mean when I say good mental health. Because right there, we're already starting a major discussion because the world operates on this absence model that you're mentally healthy because you're free of mental illness. My work measures mental health as the presence and absence of flourishing. And languishing is this in-between condition where you're not mentally ill, but you're not mentally healthy, or right, which means you're not flourishing. And that's why we call it the middle child. You're sort of stuck in between. But a better description comes from some of my interviews with people who fit the criteria. And they talk about feeling not only this sense of emptiness, but they feel emotionally either drained or numb. By that, they're not feeling anything good, and they're not feeling anything bad. They're just feeling sort of nothing. And then the last description that describes what languishing is, this feeling of being dead inside or dying inside, which is sounds a little morbid, but if you've experienced languishing, you know what people are referring to, and I've experienced it myself. So languishing is this condition that has been invisible to the world until I started measuring mental health positively. You can have the absence of good mental health, but not fit the criteria for mental illness. And that in-between state is what my book is all about.
It's so insightful. And it's great that you put some language around this, because I think a lot of people have felt that, especially during the pandemic. Yeah. And you're right, Adam Grant's article that you wrote called Feeling Blah During the Pandemic, it's called Languishing, really took off because a lot of people said, wait a minute, you've put some words on things I'm feeling, especially yes. During that really tough time in that pandemic. But talk a little more about the research and what you're doing around this and how you discovered languishing, because we've all probably felt it, but you put some words on it, but actually there's real research behind this and some science. You didn't just make this up, right, Corey?
Oh, goodness, no. I could bend your ear for a couple of hours to tell you about how I came to discover this, but it all started, and the book starts here, with this very haunting experience after I had been adopted by my grandparents and into this really loving home where I felt safe, and I suddenly became an honor roll student, and I had friends, and I was happy in working hard, and there was a big change in my life. But when I would come to the end of the day, there would be this quiet emptiness, like a fog setting in, that would come over me. And it did not feel good, JP. It felt scary, to tell you the truth, this sense of emptiness. And that feeling never left me, the experience. Jumpstart, I get to graduate school and I don't want to study mental health. And I naively assumed that people were going about studying it the way I meant when I used the word mental health. I meant the presence of mental health. And it turns out I could not find any measurement tool out there. People were fixated, and don't get me wrong, for good reason, on mental illness. Suddenly I realized that we had been living for years under a very mistaken idea, which is that good mental health is merely the absence of mental illness. I went about creating a measurement tool. That's what we scientists do when we want to study something that nobody has studied. That's how we make these things that are invisible, visible. I have 14 questions that are in the book and that are being used around the world to measure the presence and the absence of good mental health. I can give you a sense so your listeners might know what some of these questions are. By the way, I measure mental health. It goes back to ancient traditions of how you think about happiness or a good life. The first tradition comes from Epicurus, the great philosopher who championed pleasure. I ask people, how have you felt in the past month? Happy, satisfied, or interested in life? Now, to be mentally healthy, you have to have one of those three every day or almost every day. And then you immediately bump into another philosopher who had a very different view on what happiness was, what living a good life was, and that's Aristotle, who said, human beings need to work on becoming excellent at being individuals and citizens. So it's called functioning well. There's five questions about social well-being, like, do you feel you're making contributions to your community, your workplace, or society? Do you feel you belong to a community? And then there's six questions on psychological well-being. For instance, do you like most parts of your personality? Are you confident that they can express your ideas and opinions? Does your life have direction and meaning? So that gives your listeners a sense of, when I talk about measuring mental health as more than the absence, I'm talking about some stuff that's pretty powerful stuff that makes life meaningful and worthwhile and languishing. It turns out there's lots of people who don't feel much of those good things during a typical week or month, but they don't necessarily all feel depressed or anxious or mentally ill. So I discovered this condition, languishing, and then what I found was, over time, that this condition of languishing is a gateway. And by that I mean, in the scientific jargon, it's a serious risk factor for becoming mentally ill. If you stay in that condition of languishing too long, people fit the criteria to eventually become clinically depressed, eventually develop an anxiety disorder. And during the pandemic, healthcare workers who were otherwise doing okay during normal conditions, if they were languished, they developed PTSD more likely than those who were flourishing. And it goes on and on the list. This languishing is this condition that if you stay there too long, it is a very serious impediment to your life.
Well, thank you for giving us more information around that, because I think that we can all understand this. And I think it's such an insightful way to think about it, because we always do sort of look at this as saying good mental health is the absence of not having a mental problem. And I think we always expect to be perfect, but the reality is we're not. Mm-hmm. Every day is not perfect. And so getting to good mental health and trying to be in that space where you're flourishing is the goal. And so great that you've had to find languishing. Corey, you've also more recently been doing some new work around mental health, and there's a new pilot data you have. I'm interested if you could talk a little bit about what you're seeing there before we go back into kind of the deep dive onto the book and this concept of languishing to flourishing.
I'm working now as an external scholar at the Geese School or College of Business at the University of Illinois, specifically in the Center for Social Responsibility in Business and Work with the director, Oscar Ibarra. And he and I are working on developing a national report of mental health in the workplace and at home using my measure. And what we do is ask those 14 questions of employees. And we just did that recently in the last month of 2,000 plus working adults. We asked them the first 14 questions, and we randomly assigned to start by answering these questions: how you feel at home, away from work. When you're not at work, how you feel at home. And then after they've done that, they go back and then they answer them the same questions. Well, do you feel these things at work? And here is what our pilot data already are beginning to suggest, that only 35% of adults, working adults in our study, were flourishing at both home and at work. The next highest was 31%, where they were languishing in both places, at home and at work. These last two categories groups of people are rather interesting too. 25% were languishing at work, but they were finding good mental health and flourishing at home. So they could escape this condition of languishing, which happened at work, but they experienced some mental health or flourished at home. And the last group is 9%, where they were able to flourish at work, but they were languishing at home. Now, this is just the beginning of a report that we're going to be putting together annually for the workplace in the United States, because I think we need to really begin to think about this, because flourishing is not happening at work. It's much more likely to happen at home, if it happens at all. And we need to begin to understand, well, how is it, what conditions in the workplace are enabling flourishing? And how can we address this huge problem, which is 56% of working adults are languishing at work? I think it's going to be my challenge to the future of human resources, because I think if any human resources are focusing on anything having to do with mental health, they're focusing on things like depression. And that's all good and well, but there's a bigger problem of languishing, not only at home, but a much bigger problem of languishing in the workplace. Given all that I know about what languishing does to missed days of work, and we can talk about that in work cutbacks and healthcare utilization, I think HR really needs to perk up and take this seriously.
Well, absolutely. We spend most of our lives working, and I think all of us, no one goes to work saying, I want to have a bad day or languish at work. We want to be fulfilled. We want to attain mastery. We want to feel a sense of satisfaction and belonging, right? And accomplishment, all those things. And I think every HR leader wants that for their organizations as well. And so there's things we're not doing right to end up in that place where you've got 56% are languishing. So I think we've got to continue to dig in. And that's why this is such an important conversation. Let's talk a little bit more about what you've seen and how languishing starts to happen. And maybe this will give us some clues on how we do this better as HR leaders. But you talked about systemic social isolation was one of the key factors. And obviously the pandemic, we were all immediately isolated for good reasons at that time period. But other factors that are driving this trend?
One that I write about, this is based on a study of medical professionals. They were in three very interesting specialties that were considered pretty high challenge and stress. One is obstetrics and gynecology, and the other was general surgery. I'm blending on the third one. I could look it up if you're interested, but essentially these are three medical specialties that even other doctors not in them would say these are probably a lot more stressful than most specialties. And what I found interesting was in their level of languishing and flourishing in this study had nothing to do with whether they were even in these challenging professions, whether they were experiencing challenge more or less. What it really came down to, JP, was whether they were working in a supportive work environment. Now, I want to get to some notes here about what exactly a supportive work environment was, because here's the deal. If they were working in an unsupported work environment, they were much more likely to be languishing. And the opposite. So here's what a supportive work environment looked like. They reported that they were working in a calm and pleasant atmosphere with their other coworkers. In other words, I say that they were getting along. Second, they had coworkers that understood that they will each have bad days, that we all have bad days when we're at work. So the third criteria, building on that, was that you had coworkers who are there for you. They will support you when you need it. And the last one is what I call they experienced genuine collegiality. That meant they were quoted that they had warm, open, and trusting relationships with their other coworkers. I find this intriguing because I know a lot of high-level professionals like doctors, lawyers, and teachers and so forth, who work in very demanding environments, and I can show you more studies. People can do hard. They can do challenging. but they will languish if they're experiencing a high level of demand at work without much support, or in an atmosphere where there's disconnection, a lack of warmth, no openness, no trust. We don't allow bad days to happen. If you have bad days, you better smile through it, because we're not there to support you. I found that study fascinating because it wasn't stress and demands. It was just the work environment. And I'm sure I'm not telling you or anything near here.
Hey, everyone. After a quick break, we're right back to our conversation with Corey. I'm excited to let you know that I've recently put together a succession planning playbook that you can download for free at futureofhr.com. And whether you want to assess your current approach to succession planning or you're building your leadership development strategy from scratch, this playbook offers an actionable framework designed to help you understand what great succession planning looks like. So go to futureofhr.com and download the succession planning playbook today. I think that you're bringing some facts to what we intuitively know, that it's never a great environment when you've got a team that isn't really interacting, or you can't bring your whole self to work, or you don't feel supported. No one wants that. But I think the fact that you're bringing real research to this just makes it more clear that this can have those effects. And that's not so much the hard work, it's the lack of support from a team and that kind of belonging and the psychological safety and the empathy that you have to have for others. Mm-hmm. When that human factor is missing, you start to have other side effects that are negative, like languishing.
Right. And so this disconnection that you're talking about and the Surgeon General is talking about, it's baked into languishing, because they're people will say that they don't have warm, trusting relationships with others. That's one of my questions. The other two that I ask that has to do with connection is, do you have a sense of belonging somewhere that you would call a community? And that should include work. And the third is, are you able to contribute anything of worth and value to your community, your workplace, or society? And when those three things are absent, I suspect people feel deeply disconnected and unappreciated. And the other word for languishing that many people use that I forgot to mention is invisible, unseen, unheard, invisible. So this ability to not, it's not just having relationships, it's the qualities of your relationships. We often confuse, by the way, JP, quantity with quality, right? We bemoan the fact that we get all alarmed, we're supposed to get alarmed by statistics showing that we have fewer and fewer confidence. I'm not worried about that, because you know what older adults have taught me in the research? With age, we spend less and less time with fewer and fewer people. And yet, our satisfaction and well-being increases with age, precisely because we're spending less time with people with whom we're not close. We get picky. We prioritize warm, trusting, close, emotionally satisfied relationships as we get older. Because as we approach the end of things in our lives, we get serious about spending only time with people with whom we're close. So don't confuse quantity with quality, people. It's quality that what people need. We need to become a person who can enable these kinds of qualities in the relationships between their employees.
Yeah, so much to unpack there, but I think you're talking about how do we create, as a people leader, right, whoever that manager is, whether it's HR or not, how do you create a team environment that really comes together? And there's, unfortunately, not enough great leaders that can bring those teams together that creates that cohesive, empathetic, psychologically safe environment where people can build those relationships and feel like they're flourishing at work. Too often we're not letting people flourish at work because of mistrust and other things happening. I think that's a really important point on the quality versus quantity. We are living in a world where I'm collecting friends and followers and all these things on social media, but is that really helping anybody? And in your book, you talk about American culture that we've long really tried to mitigate the effects of loneliness by trying to find happiness, you know, so let's be happy, not lonely. And you actually say we're meant to experience this full spectrum of emotions. Tell us more about this, why we should be experiencing a full range of emotions and why this matters.
Yeah. Reading about spiritual leaders and traditions throughout history is taught about anything, it is that almost every wise person that has ever written about life begins by talking about some form of suffering. We will suffer. We will experience adversity. We will experience loss. And most of us aren't prepared for that. And I think that's what a lot of spiritual traditions, even the religious ones, when they're done well, are about preparing you for the inevitable slings and arrows of life, where you will experience something that will either piss you off, make you angry, create resentments, make you grieve, make you feel shame or guilt. Now, we love to push those things away, hide them, not talk about them, and that makes it even worse. Clinical psychologists who study this thing called emotional suppression, it taught me also that if you don't engage with negative emotions and experiences, and you only suppress them, they will get worse. There is something about the ability to simply take time and experience the inevitable sadness and negative emotions that come with life, because they're there to teach us something, which is everything you love will be lost at some point. And the point is, you should feel sad when you've invested something good in something. I tell my students this, JP, when they graduate. And I ask them, are they feeling happy and are they feeling sad? And they're often feeling both. That's the amazing thing. I say, that's good. You feel sad because you're leaving behind something that means something to you. And that's life. You're going to have to move on. So that meant you really invested yourself and others invested in you. So you will be sad. Recognize it and appreciate it for what it is. And then why are you happy? Because you've accomplished something worthy of sacrifice and all the work. You've achieved something truly worthy of your time and the all that your family and others have given to you and supported in you. Honor that. Don't even worry about sad because it's there for a good reason too. That's life. I must say, we have to get more comfortable with that. Allow people and encourage them to say, wait a minute, just recognize the good reasons why you're feeling bad right now. And then, by the way, when you're feeling the negative stuff, there's nothing worse than reactivity. Reactivity is the worst way to respond to adversity because it's usually bringing out the worst parts of our angels. And what you want to do is be prepared. We call when you're triggered. And choose to respond. Respond from your better angels and your principles and your values. And guess what? You may not make things immediately better, but you won't make them worse. And you'll walk away from the encounter actually feeling proud rather than ashamed of yourself.
Well, it's a great message, Corey. And I love that you're challenging us to really embrace the suck, embrace the hard times, embrace the adversity. And I think a lot of younger people need to hear this because I think we're living the age where we've got Instagram and we've got, you know, TikTok and like everything's perfect, especially in social media. People don't really show the tough parts of their life. And I think some of our younger folks, I've got a 14-year-old son or 11-year-old daughter, and it's like, I love your point of there's going to be adversity. You're going to have things that not go your way. And you know what? We all know that in our careers. Like, not everything goes perfectly. You don't always get every promotion. You don't get every job you want. Things happen. But what we have to learn to embrace that it's okay. Like, you've learned something from that. It makes us better. And it should make you appreciate the good times better as well. So not to get too philosophical, but it's a great message. It's a great reframe of, especially when something's lost that you really loved, you know, and you really appreciate, but all things change, right?
They will continue to change. I don't like bed any more than anywhere else, but you know what? There's a silver lining to that. Even the bad stuff doesn't stay for long. If you deal with it, you will. But if you think you can just move on, if you ignore it, it doesn't go away. Isn't that ironic? If you stick with it and stay with it and learn from it, it too will pass. But if you ignore it and suppress it, it will stick with you.
It's an important lesson. If you do get past it, we can get to flourishing. And let's talk a little bit more about flourishing, because in your book, you identify six domains of human excellence, which I love. And so we love lists. Everyone loves listicles. So I want to know the six domains. But they're often, we talked about, overlooked in the workplace. Talk a little bit more about the six domains.
Oh, that's interesting. I'd not have anyone ask me about those six domains. Normally, everyone wants to jump into the five vitamins. So these six domains you're asking about are my way of trying to boil down the 11 questions that I asked in my measurement tool to get at flourishing. And these 11 questions are focusing on what I referred to earlier as functioning well in life. And functioning well is the equivalent of what this Aristotle's notion of happiness was all about, which was virtue. Now, virtue sounds all ethically and morally laden. What he meant by that was excellence, becoming better as a human being in the way you conduct yourself. And so the first domain is, are you able to conduct yourself with acceptance? And I ask questions about, are you accepting of yourself? Which is a very important way to function, because that's not necessarily the easiest thing to do, because having just talked about the fact that we will all have negative experiences. Some of those negative experiences, JB, I don't know about you, but I created them myself. I have done stupid, dumb, unkind things that I felt guilty or ashamed of. And there's all parts, all of us have parts of ourselves that we don't necessarily like, and we kind of want to keep them hidden. But self-acceptance isn't about being perfect. It's about coming to an understanding that I can like most parts of who I am. And on the whole, I'm probably no less imperfect or no more imperfect, no less perfect than anyone else in this world. And then the challenge of acceptance, it goes beyond yourself. It's about accepting other people and recognizing that they are not the same as you. And we don't live in a world where everyone thinks the same, looks the same, worships the same, talks the same. We have to like most parts of other people because we live in a diverse world. And whether we like it or not, our world is getting more diverse. The first standard of excellence is about conducting yourself with self and other acceptance. There's others like autonomy. And I know maybe like Dan Pink in his book on motivation talked about autonomy, but autonomy is a very important part of how I measure flourishing too. Because human beings need to be self-directed. They need to experience life and work where they feel like they're an agent. And what they're doing by that, it means that they have some ability to make choice and decisions in what they're doing. On top of that, autonomy extends to the ability to have confidence to think and express your own ideas and your own opinions. And I'll go quickly over to the last form. The third is connection. We know what that's all about, but it's not, again, about quantity. It's about having this ability to connect around what I call principles, not just warmth, trust, belonging, and mattering. It's about principles like, are you able to engage with others with what I would call equality? There's all kinds of differences in the workplace. Yesterday, I was at an old laryngologist, and I was sitting in the office waiting for the doctor to come in. The nurse had just checked in with me. She went out the door. She opened it, went out the door to get the doctor, and I overheard her. She just yelled, Lindley, Dr. Jarum, Corey is ready. And I laughed. I've never been in an office place where a nurse yells out in a kind of fun way, hey, Dr. Jarum, are you ready in there? Corey's ready. And then there was laughter and connection in that workplace. Do you think they didn't know that they had different statuses, doctors versus nurses versus other staff? No. They noticed. They know that. But they treated each other with some principles of equality. At the end of the day, we're still humans that enjoyed each other's company. So this connection has to do with a lot of principles that we need to get back to. And the last three are competence, of course. We need to get better at things. We need to feel like we're growing and getting better at things or that we're good. Fifth is mastery. is this in connected to competence? Are you motivated? And are you in an environment where you're challenged to grow and learn? And the last is what I call mattering. Do you believe that your life and that your work has some significance? By significance, I'm talking about something beyond success. When we talk about significance, is that did your life and even your work contribute something to other people's well-being? So I think those standards of excellence are really important. And that's what I'm trying to measure when I talk about functioning well. And when people are flourishing, they're focusing on these standards of excellence, whether they know it or not. When people are languishing, they've gotten away from things like mattering, mastery, competence, connection, and they've lost autonomy and they aren't accepting of themselves or other people.
Yeah, I think those six domains of human excellence are brilliant. Corey, I think they're timeless as well. And I think for just as humans, not just HR leaders, to your point, if you start to think about each of those and start to measure yourself and say, how am I doing? How could I do more? And I think you're right. When people have just find that connection, when things click for them, it's because it's coming together, right? They feel confident. They're going after mastery. They're able to feel like they matter. That's what matters in our workplaces. And the cool thing is that people, leaders, and HR, we have an opportunity to make that happen because every job does matter. Every role does matter. Every person matters in a different way. And so I think it's what you're saying really is interesting. And I think it's almost how you think about it and how I can think about the story of when they put a man on the moon. And this is a story, I don't know if it's really true, but the janitor at NASA,
yes.
I think it was JFK, that said something to the fact of like, what are you doing here? And he said, I'm helping to put a man on the moon, but he was actually clinging the floor. And that goes back to all of us matter, but we have to have the reframe of like, what are we really doing? How do we connect everyone in the organization to the bigger picture and help them understand how they contribute to a bigger goal? That's the magic of HR and leadership. And so I'm so glad you brought those up.
Yeah, I've often thought about that story, and I suspect why he felt like he was also helping to do people on the moon. He wasn't invisible to the rest of the employees there, and he felt part of the team, and he was probably included and acknowledged and treated with equality in serving and not invisibility. And by equality, I'm not talking we're all the same status. We all, right? Status differences permeate our lives, and will always. But when you see each other, you treat each other as part of the team. You belong. And what you do here matters to us. And here's the tricky thing, and I say this a lot in the book, and I suspect it bugs the you-know-what out of people. Because everyone wants these good things in their life. They want to matter. They want to feel needed. They want to belong. But guess what? Do you ever treat others the same way? In order to get those things, it's amazing how much you should be giving the very same things to other people. So when other people come and they want to belong, do you welcome them? Do you recognize them as part of the team? You want to be recognized and welcome, and you want to feel like you matter, but do you say thank you to everybody? And do you, I sometimes acknowledge that, hey, I really appreciate what you do. Without you, I wouldn't, this day would be harder for me. I just say all that because we're like these little birds, but in the nest, expecting mom and dad to bring back the worm. When in fact, sometimes at some point, we have to go out and get the worms and feed others too. You don't get these things, JP, without giving me.
It's a powerful message. And I think the idea of who's invisible in your organization, how do you make them visible and ensure you don't have that? That is a critical factor in belonging. No one should feel invisible in organizations, no matter what your role is, because everyone has a lot of value to add. Now, Corey, you also have these five vitamins of flourishing, which are the following. I'll read them to you so you can get through them faster. There's a lot. Following your curiosity to learn something new, building warm and trusting relationships, moving closer to the sacred, the divine, and the infinite, having and living your purpose, and playing. Talk to us about how these work together independently and collectively to help people to flourish.
we can talk about those five vitamins, which are activities that researchers have found encourage people to move up my measurement tool for languishing, out of languishing, even out of depression, by the way, JP. The studies have shown people who were depressed, who did more of those things, started to move out of depression. Those who were languishing moved out of languishing. And those who were flourishing stayed there. And by the way, if they stopped doing those five things, those who were flourishing, guess what? They started to drift into languishing. So these are five activities that have done with the right intention. I talk a lot about that in the book, with the right intention. The studies show that if you do more of each one of those, you don't have to do all five every day. People would choose one if they did more of that activity, like helping other people. They had a much better day. And as a result, over time, if they continue to do more of the helping or learning new things or playing more, they continued their journey out of languishing or depression and towards flourishing. Each chapter is devoted to unpacking each of those five vitamins in a way that hopefully gives the readers a sense of how deep and meaningful each activity really is. But here's the thing. They start to bleed into each other, and I'll end here, right? When you play or engage in what I call active leisure, we often do that with people we really like and want to spend time with and who want to spend time with us. Sometimes we play alone and do at leisure alone. That might be true. But if you look out in the world, when people are having fun, they're often having fun with other people. But the key is active leisure or play, not that passive stuff. So connection is part of sometimes playing. And so is learning. Sometimes we learn alone. Sometimes we learn together. So that's the beautiful thing. When you start the journey and start adding these things to your life, you will find that you're doing more than one at the same time.
Someone who wants to be very productive, you can actually design your life and say, let's try to learn a new skill with people I like, but make it a game. I'm just teasing. Try to get all five items in one thing. But I think you're right. These are all make a lot of sense because this really talked about, it kind of goes back to the human excellence, right? You're making a connection, you're making meaning, you're giving back. And when you're doing those things, as you're talking about it, it's like, I'm not thinking about myself as much as I'm thinking about others and what I'm doing to help other people. And when you start to put the onus not on you, but giving that value, it's amazing how much better you feel. So I think these are just, it's great. And I encourage people to read the book and really get into the five vitamins because we can't do them justice here. McCoy, I only got you for a few more minutes, I know, and I want to talk a little bit about how HR leaders can do more. How can we as HR leaders keep mental health at the forefront, but build momentum in a way that's not like a corporate initiative? I think sometimes we put in programs that make sense. We're trying to help everybody, but it starts to feel very corporate-y that we're trying to get wellness or well-being, and we're giving out brochures, we're having webinars, and that's good. And I'm not saying don't do that, but I wonder if that could be not always what we really need to be doing, or it's going to have the impact we expect on our team members.
I've often thought and wondered if people in the workplace, they were to sit down during a review or a meeting with an employee and a manager or a leader and look at the 14 questions on my questionnaire and use some of them as the basis for conversation with your employee and with your middle management and so forth. Like, so imagine there's one question on there, for instance, are you being challenged to grow and become a better person? Because personal growth and the experience of personal growth is fundamental to functioning well in life. All of this assumes, JP, that there is an atmosphere where you can be quite honest and say, well, I don't know why, but I have not felt in my work that there's anything that's challenging me to grow and become a better person. Now, could you imagine what a wonderful discussion would ensue if mirror management leadership really wanted to change that and really wanted to hear from other people, well, what'd we do if we could add one thing this year that you felt would challenge you to grow and become a better person here at work? Now, that's just one question out of 14 that you could be sitting down as a basis for review. I remember, I'm not in the business world, but there was a time when they talked about 360. Wouldn't it be interesting to evaluate yourself as leadership and culture and say, wow, this is not a place where people find purpose. They don't find personal growth. They lose their confidence to think and express their ideas and opinions. What's going on here? This is not good. This is not the workplace I imagined creating. I would encourage HR to simply start with taking my questionnaire as the basis for self-reflection and engagement with each other, to thinking about leadership in a different way besides just meetings, but talking about creating the conditions for flourishing for yourself and each other. I would want to work in a place that's excited about bringing that into reality.
It's a great suggestion, Corey. Appreciate that. Corey, my last question for you is something I ask all guests, which is What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
This is going to sound both positive and negative, but it's where I'm at with the world right now when it comes to mental health and mental health. Do we really care? I've heard a lot of people talk about mental illness and mental health for a very long time. And then let's tell your audience, things aren't getting better, they're getting worse. It's not enough to say, well, here's another report about languishing and depression and all these other things, and nothing changes. I think it starts with the fact that if you didn't move in this direction, people will look very quickly to whether you're sincere, whether you really care. And they will walk away mentally as soon as they see that this is just another thing for your brochure to put on the outside, but it's not there on the inside. Do we really care? If you don't move in this direction, because people will see the insincerity a mile away.
Corey, that is a very fair challenge. And I have to say that I started this conversation, I may have been languishing a little bit, but I am absolutely flourishing. Thank you so much for being on the Future of HR podcast. This was an insightful conversation. I enjoyed it a ton.
Thank you. I enjoyed it as well, JP.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR podcast. Thanks again to Corey for inspiring us to invest in our well-being and ensuring that our teams flourish. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Angela Chang Simony. Angela is a global HR executive with over 30 years of comprehensive experience in both generalist and specialist competencies and partnering with C-suite executive leaders. She's a sought-after speaker and a voice in the HR community. And this is a great conversation with an authentic leader, so don't miss it. Thanks again for listening to Future of HR and being part of our community.